This is a Hog Sports Network podcast.
It's Wednesday, May 29th, 2024. We're 2 days away from the start of the NCAA Fayetteville Regional. We're going to talk about the bracket today with Bubba Carpenter, but first, a word from our sponsor.
Kendall King, where it's all about teamwork. Building brands around a design concept, Kendall King takes pride in their skill sets in displays and signing, as well as dot-com photography, content creation, and influencer marketing. The bases are loaded, and the Kendall King team is bringing it home. This is the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, presented by Kendall King, the first podcast devoted entirely to Arkansas baseball, featuring insight from Arkansas baseball color analyst Bubba Carpenter. Here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, good morning from our downtown Fayetteville studio. We appreciate you being with us. If you're watching us live on our social media pages, good afternoon. If you're listening to us on our podcast delay with Bubba Carpenter, I'm Matt Jones. And we now know the field for the NCAA Fayetteville Regional. You kind of speculated on it for several weeks leading up to it, and now we finally know. And, you know, Bubba, we talked last week about how well Baseball America and D1 Baseball project the field. They both actually got 3 of 4 right in the Fayetteville Regional this week. Actually, Baseball America had this pegged midway through last week, but they're always tweaking, you know, the field.
Yeah.
And they ended up dropping one of the teams. I think they dropped Kansas State out. Kansas State wasn't even projected to make the tournament by Baseball America. They had Nichols coming to Fayetteville, and then K-State jumps back in. They kind of remind me a little bit of Arizona last year, the fact they weren't one of the last four teams in like Arizona was, but you look at their record and you know, they're one of those teams that certainly was on the bubble.
Yeah, I was looking at different ones, and you know, it's funny how close they ended up getting it. But, you know, one I saw had Texas coming here. I think you and I talked about it last week. That would have been fun. But, I like our draw. I don't know. You and I haven't even got a chance to really talk about it much. We texted a little bit. But, you know, I think it's a good matchup for us. We're facing some good offensive teams. But, you know, we've got good pitching. So if you break down the numbers and you look at our pitching versus their offense, I think it's a good matchup for us.
I'm going to toot my own horn a little bit here. If you'll go to wholehogsports.com, you can read a breakdown on all these different teams that I did on Memorial Day. I'm going to have to reference it a lot because we're still learning about these teams. But you can see that it's headlined analysis, what to know about the teams at the NCAA Fayetteville Regional. And we'll break it down. First off, if you take a look at the bracket here that Blake has pulled up. You see that Fayetteville is paired with the Virginia Regional, the Charlottesville Regional, Arkansas, Louisiana Tech, Kansas State, and SEMO here in Fayetteville, out in Charlottesville, Virginia. Mississippi State, a little bit of a surprise that they didn't get to host in Starkville this year. St. John's is the 3 seed, and Penn is the number 4. The winners of these two regionals will play next week. If Arkansas wins the Fayetteville Regional, that super regional will be here in Fayetteville. The Razorbacks, as we said, the number 5 national seed in this year's tournament. If Arkansas doesn't win, who knows where the super regional will be played. I don't think we're going to care a whole lot in terms of the Whole Hog Baseball podcast. And then, of course, the winner of the super regional goes on to the College World Series. Potential again for an all-SEC super regional if Arkansas and Mississippi State can get through those brackets.
You know, when I first saw it go out, I thought, all right, it's going to be us and Mississippi State. But then I started looking at Virginia's numbers last night, and their numbers are really good. Their offensive numbers. Now, pitching-wise, they give up a lot of runs. I mean, their ERA is 560. But, I mean, they're scoring. Their team batting average is 341. They give up. They score almost 10 runs per game. Mm. So, I mean, they can swing it now, but they're facing Sinja.
Mississippi State keeps the same rotation. I mean, they could maybe throw Sinja in game 1 and hold Cal Stephan for game 2, although it's probably not likely unless the splits tell you that that's the way you ought to go.
Right. So whoever they end up facing, they've got 2 legitimate starters at Mississippi State. Plus, I just like their team. I like the way they finished the season. I think they're good. I thought they were good all year. They got a good player, so that's going to be a really fun matchup to keep up with. Who do you pick in that? I know we're not even talking about our regional right now, but
that's tough. Mississippi State is playing well, and they're fired up that they didn't get a regional. They felt like they ought to host. Arizona is a team; they were 13th in the national seeds, but I thought they were probably the least deserving host this year. I mean, you look at side by side Arizona and Mississippi State. RPI, Mississippi State was 25, Arizona was 31. You look at quad one wins. Mississippi State was 16-14 in quad one games this year. Arizona was 3-9. Strength of schedule. Mississippi State's strength of schedule was better. Mississippi State had more wins. The only thing that you can say Arizona was better than Mississippi State was that Arizona won a weaker conference. They won the regular season and the conference tournament in the Pac-12. But, boy, it certainly seemed like Mississippi State ought to get a sixth regional for the SEC. But I wonder if some of this played into it. Two things. They've got three West Coast regionals. It lowers the travel for some of the teams out west. You know, we don't see anybody in Fayetteville this year like we saw last year with Arizona and Santa Clara coming over. The other thing, I kind of think, what do they call it in horse trading? You know, you do one thing because you know something's coming later.
Yeah.
The SEC got 11 bids in the SEC tournament or in the NCAA tournament. And so I think that maybe it's like, hey, here's your trade-off. We don't give you a sixth regional, but we get that last bubble team in.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think that has a lot to do with it. I always take, and I'll put like, okay, let's say, let's trade Mississippi State. Let's put Mississippi State out there in their conference and put them in the Southwest Conference or Southeast Conference. Let's see what happens there. And you know, I think Mississippi State's a better team. So, I mean, I'm a little biased towards the SEC, but I don't know. I think they deserve to host, but I think they're going to be in good shape, though. I really do. But the more I look at Virginia, though, they're a powerful team, but I don't think they can shut Mississippi State's offense down. And I think the Mississippi State pitchers will do a good job against Virginia hitting to shut that down.
Think Arizona will win the Southwest Conference this year? If the SWC, just
I didn't think about that.
Right over your head.
Yeah, it's still early.
Yeah, so Florida getting into the tournament was a controversial pick. I mean, they're 28-27, and the NCAA's got a rule that you cannot be a postseason team with a record under 500 unless you win your conference tournament. And so Florida, they're one win away or one outcome away from not even being able to qualify for this tournament. And here they are as a 27-loss team in the tournament. Now, of course, you know, they lost or they played the number one strength of schedule. They've got some good wins this year. They got a series win over Arkansas – they got a series win over A&M, a series win over Georgia. They beat Arkansas once. They beat Kentucky once. They beat Tennessee once. So, there are good games on that resume, but there's some bad losses too. Yeah. And I wanted to play something here real quick. This is Chad Holbrook. He used to be the South Carolina head coach. He's the – head coach now at College of Charleston. And a lot of people think that Florida College of Charleston's bid. Go ahead, Blake.
Take the high road a little bit more than probably I'm taking it right now. But I'll fall on the sword for my players. And they deserve better.
This is hard, isn't it, Coach?
We work. You know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And for have someone in a room that hadn't seen us play to tell us we're not good enough is asinine to me. And again, you know, I was a coach that got fired for going 13-17. I know what a mediocre regular season is that many teams that got in had. And we had a phenomenal regular season, and it was ignored. And, I mean, there are teams that got in today that probably sent their players home because they knew they didn't probably deserve to be in. And our kids were denied a chance to keep playing. And 28-5 their last 33, won the regular season. Regular season doesn't matter? Oh, he said it did matter. Now it doesn't matter when it comes to College of Charleston? I'm at a loss.
Was there a point during the show that you knew you guys weren't getting in, or were you holding out hope throughout the whole show?
That's Chad Holbrook. You know, he was at South Carolina, and he mentioned he got fired for going 13-17 in the SEC. Now you got five teams this year that are in the NCAA tournament with 13-17 SEC tournament or SEC records. He's got a point. And you know, we mentioned last week we felt like this could happen to UALR, to Little Rock. You know, here they are sitting at home this week, even though and you got SEMO coming to Fayetteville, who finished second to UALR in their conference. It is unfortunate for the teams that are outside of the power conferences, because what the selection committee has basically told them this week is that the regular season doesn't matter unless you play in, you know, a handful of conferences.
Right. I love that you showed that video, Matt, because that's one of the things I wrote down. I saw the video, and so I wrote down that quote. You know, you'd have someone in a room that hasn't seen a play tell us that we're not good enough, it's asinine. Mm-hmm. I wrote that down, but seeing the video is way more powerful.
Yeah.
And you know what? I mean, you want to play for a guy like that that sticks up for his team, but he's got a great point. Can't argue with that. And I think Chris Curry at Euler, I think they've got a good argument there, yeah, too. I mean, they
any regular season champion has, yeah, got a good argument.
I don't know. It seems like the rules change every year, and I don't know the best way to do it. I know they interviewed one of the guys on the committee about if there's a conflict of interest with it. It just so happens that everyone that's on the board, their team got in. Mm. Well, I think every one of them.
Well, not Auburn. John Cohen's at Auburn, but most of them.
Most of the bubble teams got in. If there was a bubble team, they got in. Yeah, Auburn had no chance. But it's just, you know, and they said, well, they make them go out of the room when they vote on their team. But still, you know, there's input going in there. I mean, it's human nature. If I was on the board, I would pull for Arkansas. You know, I would make sure that everyone knows our resume. And, you know, he's got a great point. There's no one in that room that's probably seen them play a game this year.
It's tough because, you know, in the SEC, there is it's the best baseball league.
Right.
And there's no question. Yeah. I mean, they got better players, better funding, better support, better everything. And so it's really tough because these SEC teams, for the most part, I don't know that Florida was deserving this year. I can see a case both ways for them, but what happens is that you're hurting these regular season champions. A College of Charleston, Lamar was 44-15 in the Southland. They didn't get to play. They probably had the number two pitching staff this year in the country behind Arkansas. You're comparing their resumes to Mississippi State and to South Carolina, and it's hard to make a justification for that team that's not in the SEC against an SEC team.
Well, so what do you do? Do you add more teams? Do you expand the field? I think you're going to have to.
You either expand the field or you take away the automatic bid from the conference tournaments.
Yeah.
I would be fine, and you know, maybe we're putting the cart before the horse here because I want to talk about the SEC tournament a little bit later. I'd be fine if they get rid of the tournaments and make that a weekend where you get your two best teams or maybe your four best teams.
Yeah.
And don't give the opportunity for someone to come out of absolutely nowhere like a Tulane did and steal a bid. But we'll get into that a little bit later with the SEC tournament. Let's get back to the Fayetteville Regional. Arkansas plays SEMO on Friday. It's supposed to be a 2 o'clock first pitch, but, you know, there's rain in the forecast, a 50% chance of showers, according to the Weather Service, on Friday. Now, you know how that goes this time of year. It's not like it's an all-day rain event usually. It's, you know, you might have a couple of hours, pop-up storms, it's out of here, and you can get on with your day, and maybe you have another pop-up storm later in the afternoon. That seems like that's usually how it goes this time of year. But Arkansas and SEMO are supposed to play at 2 o'clock. ESPN Plus is where that will be streamed. And then the second game of the regional is going to be between Kansas State and Louisiana Tech. Let's start with SEMO. It's a team that, you know, we mentioned they finished second in the OVC this year to UALR. UALR loses a couple of one-run games at the conference tournament, and then SEMO, you know, they get through and they win it. They had to beat Morehead State on Saturday. They lose to them in the first game, but they beat them in the second game. And, you know, so here they are. Andy Sawyers is their head coach. He played for Dave Van Horn at Nebraska in Van Horn's first year there. 1998, he was his catcher. He was Van Horn's volunteer assistant coach at Nebraska in the year 2000. There's two former Van Horn assistants that are in this regional, which I think is kind of interesting. Lane Burroughs from Louisiana Tech as well. SEMO, what stands out to you about the Redhawks?
Well, it's just, I mean, the fact that they've hit 100 home runs, I mean, they've hit a lot of home runs. You know, how much small ball they play. I mean, they play a lot of small ball, which, you know, when you get into postseason play, you know, every run is crucial. So that could be, you know, that could be in a, it could play a role in that. What stood out to me, and I read your article, Ben Palmer leads the team in sack bunts and home runs.
Have you ever seen that before?
I have never seen that. I was talking to Phil Elson yesterday about it, and I said, have you ever seen, I've never seen that. Mm-hmm. A guy that can lead in sack bunts and home runs.
He leads the nation in sack bunts.
That's crazy to me, because I'm one of those that says, I think there's a time to bunt, mm-hmm. you know, and then there's a time not to bunt. And I think your home run leader shouldn't be up there bunting a lot. But I don't know the makeup of the team until I really see them play and get a feel for it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But, I mean, it's working. I mean, they won some games this year. So I've just never seen that combination, leading in sack bunts and
home amazing.
Runs. So something you learn something new every day.
They've attempted 72 sack bunts this year.
That's
They've
crazy.
Got 27 sack flies. So they're obviously a team that can, you know, move runners around.
Okay, so I'm a money ball guy. I don't like giving up outs. I don't like when there's a runner at first, I don't like bunting him to second. Mm. You know, we can do a hit and run, maybe a delay steal. You can do something, but I don't like bunting him to second. Now, I'm a big fan with runners at first and second, bunting him over mm-hmm. to third. Get him to third with one out. Or mm-hmm. runner at second, get him to third with one out. Even with a runner at second and nobody out, I want my hitter to be able to control the barrel and hit it to the right side and move him. Maybe you hit a double, trade places with him, maybe move him over. But there's a time to sack bunt depending on your matchup at the plate and all that. But 72 sack bunts, that's attempted sacks. That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a big number.
132 is the RPI this year for SEMO. They're 175 in strength of schedule. They've only played three quad one games, and that was their first weekend. They lost to Dallas Baptist down in Dallas to open the year. Their per-game run differential, this is a number I like to look at, 1.6, almost 1.7. So it's a team that I don't know that they've really been tested a whole lot outside of the best teams in their conference.
Right. Well, I tell you, when like I said before, I'm a little bit biased towards the SEC. I look at the gauntlet we went through, the 10 weeks of SEC play prepares us for weekends like this.
Yeah.
They're not going to throw anything at us we haven't seen. So I feel like it's a time for our offense to really get jump started. You know, you kind of clear the mechanism. You start fresh. You're 0-0 going into Friday. So I think we're going to score runs. I really do. And on the flip side of that, Matt, I don't think their hitters have seen what we've got.
Probably
not. I'm sorry. Yep. We got some guys, you know, a Gage Wood fastball. It's 94, 95, but it plays faster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got a Fouch, a Faraday. You know, you got if Molina comes out with that carry fastball at the top of the zone, these guys haven't seen a lot of looks like that. So I think it's going to be tough on their hitters.
Hayden Dow is who we think will go for SEMO. None of these teams have announced starters for the regional yet, but he's a senior left-hander. He ascended to their number one role late in the year, 4.89 ERA, a 1.44 whip. By the same token, I don't know that these pitchers are really going to be anything that Arkansas hasn't seen in SEC play.
Yeah, I don't think so. Now, here's one thing that you look at their fielding percentage, the kind of the way they play the game, Andy Sawyers, Lane Burrows, you know, their own coach, their own DVH's coaching mm-hmm. tree. So they're going to have a lot of his personality. So you're going to play a team that's probably not going to give you a lot. You're going to mm-hmm. have to earn it.
They played Louisiana Tech, yeah, it's been a dogfight.
It has. They're going to make us earn everything. So they're not going to make stupid mistakes on the bases. You know, they're not going to make errors in the field. They're going to walk a lot of people. They're going to make us earn it. And in the game of baseball, you know, anything can happen. You can't overlook anybody.
Mm-hmm. Trevor Ezell is an assistant coach at SEMO, by the way. Played for the Razorbacks in 2019, another connection to Van Horn on those teams. The big question for Arkansas, who are they going to throw on Friday? And, I mean, I think that we don't know. We haven't heard. You know, the expectation here is that it wouldn't surprise if it was Gage Wood. Wouldn't surprise if it was Mason Molina, although I wonder if you might go with someone else to start, and then if things don't go well, you can go pull Molina out of the bullpen because we know he's been pitching well in those roles.
So that's kind of my thinking right there. Gage is – they've been grooming him to start mm-hmm. for postseason. Well, here we are. We're postseason. So it's a perfect game for Gage to start. See how long you get three innings out of him, four, it's great. I love Molina out of the bullpen. Phil told me a stat yesterday. He's retired 15 out of last 16 batters he's faced.
Oh, wow.
Molina has out of the pen. Well, I think he pitches different out of the pen. And, you know, maybe it was kind of a wake-up call for him. I don't know what it is, but he has a different – his mound presence has been different his last few outings coming out of the pen. His velo's been up, which makes his changeup more effective, his breaking ball more effective. I like him, and I'm one of those, if it's not broke, don't fix it. So I really like him coming out. Now, with that being said, if the matchups – I haven't seen the splits for lefties-righties versus Simo. So mm-hmm. If they struggle against lefties, they may flip that. They may start Molina and follow him with Gage, or you still got McIntyre. I mean, you've got a lot of options.
I feel like Molina is kind of your Swiss Army knife right now, right? I mean, use him in any kind of way. One thing I like about him is that he's got regional experience. He pitched last year for Texas Tech in the Gainesville Regional. They beat UConn 3-2. He had 10 strikeouts and 6 innings, 1 hit in 6 innings last year against UConn. So he has pitched well on the big stage.
Right. So, I mean, there you go. So at some point, I think we'll see him. Now, in a perfect world, we go out and we score some runs. We don't have to use Molina. We can let Gage ride a little bit, or whoever starts. I mean, you know, the key is, I think we need to score, and I think we score early. You know, hopefully this offense is going to get going. I still say we've been trending. I don't even look at the SEC tournament. Mm-hmm. I don't. It's a mental thing. We can get into that in a little bit.
They weren't terrible at the SEC tournament, though.
No,
it wasn't great. It wasn't great offensive days, but you know, you still score 5 and 6 runs. That's going to win a lot of times if you're pitching normally.
Right. I guess I look more the kind of just some of the plays we didn't make. Mm. I think it goes back to, so when you go into baseball, is such a mental game. We went into Hoover and. When we take the field, when you're a player and you take the field, you want to win. Mm-hmm. You're not trying to lose. You want to win. But knowing that you don't have to win, that's a different mindset, Matt. And so you go out there on the field and you're not really locked in. What makes the Razorback baseball team so good year in and year out is DVH is a master at getting them locked in mentally. He didn't have to say a whole lot. These guys, there's an expectation of them when they step out on the field where they know every pitch can change the outcome of the game. Well, SEC tournament, it really didn't matter if we won or lost. It really didn't. We could go 2 and out and come back here, we're a 5 seed. And everyone knew that. I think we wanted to get out of there without getting hurt. And I think some of the plays that we didn't make on defense, we normally make throughout the year. I look at the soft liner to second with Stovall. You know, they got by him in the first inning when Hagen was pitching. You know, one hopper to Aloy at shortstop. You know, typically he drop steps and catches that. He kind of got caught in between. It's just that little mental edge wasn't there that's typically there with Razorback baseball. As a result, we go 2 and out. We come home. We get ready for a regional.
Louisiana Tech is the number 2 seed. They're 45-17. They were the regular season champions in Conference USA. They did not win the Conference USA tournament last week. You know, I kind of wonder about them from a rest perspective. They played 6 games in 5 days last week. And we'll talk more about rest here in a minute. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of attention paid to Ethan Bates, and I want to talk about him real in-depth here in just a second. But Louisiana Tech, they look to me like a team that they field really well. They're right there with Arkansas. I think they're 10th nationally in fielding percentage, .981. They hit really well. They are one of the best hitting teams in the country. It feels like if you're going to beat them, you're going to have to score some runs against them because I don't know how well they pitch.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, their team ERA is, you know, almost 5. It's 4.99. Mm-hmm. I think we're gonna be able to score against them. But yeah, you're right. They can swing it up and down the lineup. You know, they average almost 6 runs per game, so they're gonna score. But once again, I still say, a lot of these teams haven't seen what we're gonna throw at them. We can throw so many different things at them, and you know, I keep going back to Fouch throwing 100 with a ton of arm side run. You got Faraday with the nasty cutter. You know, Molina, high spin fastball. I mean, you got Gage, a little bit of everything. I mean, there's so many different looks that we can throw at them. I just don't know that they've seen it. I don't know that, you know. Now, the thing is I'm one of those that says good pitching beats good hitting unless good hitting has a great approach. All right. If you have the right approach against good pitching, you can beat it. So, you know, if they come out with a great approach against our guys, and you know the scouting reports are going to be there. I mean, it's 2024. They know everything about every guy we have. We're going to run out there. They could put together some good at-bats. You never know. We could line out 10 times, and they could bloop 10 hits in there. You never know.
We didn't mention Hagen as a potential game one starter.
No, we haven't. Yeah, we haven't.
Because we don't think it'll happen. We don't think it'll happen, right?
We haven't even mentioned his name. I would be surprised unless there's something that they see that we're not seeing on our end. But I just don't think I don't think they will. And it's no disrespect to Simo. It is what it is. I mean, we're looking for that game too, and that's the game.
That is the game of the regional. I mean, yeah. It's like when they lost to TCU last year. You can every now and then a team's able to come back if they lose that second game, but it's really, really rare that you're able to. That's the pivotal game in the regional. I just don't think they're going to throw Hagen. You know, I've covered the team. This is 16 years now. And in all the years that Arkansas has hosted, you know, so they played a 4 seed in their regional, only one time they've thrown their ace in game one, and that was Blaine Knight against ORU in 2018. Every other year, they throw somebody else in game one. And, you know, a lot of times they might have co-aces on a staff. Like Trevor Stephan, he threw game one in 2017. You look at Stephan's numbers in 2017, they were better than Blaine Knight's that year, even though Blaine Knight was the number one starter. But it would really surprise me if they threw Hagen Smith on Friday.
Yeah. I haven't even really considered it because I don't think it's going to happen.
I don't either.
I think we can do an opener or a Gage Wood, or I keep going back to Gage, but who knows? I mean there's a lot of options. There's a couple of really good options they can go with. And I really think it's going to come down to the matchups, you know, how they swing it against righty versus lefty.
Just a few notes about Louisiana Tech here. Mentioned their record, 45-17. They went, I believe it was 21-8 in Conference USA games. That counts the tournament with what they did in the regular season. RPI of 29, strength of schedule is 89. Per game run differential, they're plus 192. So basically they're winning by, you know, 1.9 runs per game on average. 3-6 in quad one games. They haven't played, they're kind of like SEMO, they haven't played a lot of big-time competition.
Yeah.
You know, you'll see Louisiana Tech quite often play SEC teams in the midweek, or heck, we've even seen them come to Fayetteville for weekends here in recent years. The only SEC team they played in a midweek game this year was LSU. And I'll guarantee you what LSU's throwing on a midweek is not what Hagen Smith and Gabe Gackle, if he's available, and some of these others are going to be throwing if it is an Arkansas-Louisiana Tech matchup in game two.
Yeah, I don't think so. So, you know, it goes back to, you know, and Gackle's another one that we've talked about all these guys. We haven't even mentioned Gackle, but he's, you know, at the back end of that bullpen, he's about as good as it gets right now. So, yeah, you got to feel really good about that. So, yeah, I mean, I just like it, Matt. I really do. I think if you look at the numbers, you know, you look at our team ERA, 3.66. So I look when I break down a team, I'm big on the averages, tells a little bit about it, but the runs per game for me is really important versus runs allowed. That says, I mean, you can break it down pretty simple. Now, there's other things you can break down in between, but when you start to kind of read between the lines, I think it's a good matchup for us.
Ethan Bates is a bona fide All-American. I mean, look at these numbers. He and Cole McConnell are kind of their middle of the order 1-2 punch, but yeah, pull up Bates here, right here. You know, we know what he's done on the mound. 17 saves, that leads college baseball. He's got really good ERA, really good whip. But you look at him at the plate, and he's got 74 RBI. He's got 15 home runs. He's batting well over 300. I think it's in the 340s that he's batting. I mean, these are All-America-type stats for Bates. You know, you could make a case for him as a utility All-America. You could make a case for him as a relief All-American.
Well, when you go to two-way players, I mean, you've got – there's –
Blake's got something to pull up, by the way, on two-way players, but go ahead.
I was going to say he's at the top of a short list of guys, probably not far behind Caglione as far as just two-way guys.
Mm-hmm. Well, here, Blake's pulling this up right now. This is Jack Caglione against Ethan Bates because I wanted to get into this. You know, the Olerud Award is for the best two-way player. I'm going to have to put the glasses on to be able to see this. But you look at their numbers. OPS, Caglione, you know, about 300 points higher than him. Home runs, obviously Caglione's got the lead. But look at everything else. Yeah. RBI, Bates up by, you know, 74 to 58. ERA, Caglione 4.35, Bates a 3.50, so almost a full point in ERA. And then his whip is about 40 points lower, or, you know, 1.10 to Caglione's 1.50. Those are really strong numbers for Ethan Bates this year, and I think you could make an argument for him to be the two-way player of the year in college baseball.
Okay, but how much credit or stock do you put in that Caglione is pitching in the SEC? You know, Bates is getting it done in the Conference USA.
But if you go by that line of thinking, then every All-American would be an SEC.
Yeah, you're right.
You would just copy and paste the All-SEC team that they put out last week and say, hey, here's your All-Americans.
You're right. But like I said, I think I have SEC goggles on because I watch baseball. I watch teams. I mean, I watch a lot of college baseball. Mm-hmm. And it just doesn't get better than the SEC. I mean, it's crazy how good these guys are in SEC. And I'm not knocking Ethan Bates. I'll tell you. A quick story. When Ethan was transferring out of Arkansas, he texted me and said, hey, can we hit? Mm-hmm. And, you know, so he came up to the facility. We hit a couple times, and I love that kid. I mean, he's great attitude. You know, he was frustrated that he didn't hit at Arkansas and was trying to find his swing again. And I really just let him hit and, you know, threw him pitches all in different zones, just let him kind of find his swing a little bit. And at that point, he didn't know where he was going. I took some video off of the HitTrax machine and sent with him. That way he could send it out to other teams. And, you know, didn't know where he was going to end up, but it ended up being he's done well for himself.
Done very well for him. Yeah. Ended up at Navarro first for a year playing junior college, and then he ends up going to Louisiana Tech, and he's been really good for him. He was Conference USA Player of the Year, by the way. Again, I think he's got a real strong case to be All-American. Something that's interesting to me about Louisiana Tech and Kansas State is you look at their starting pitching, and to me, their number two starters look like they're better than their number one starters.
Yeah, when you look
at I mean, Louisiana Tech's number two guy, Luke Nichols, was the all-conference first-team pitcher in Conference USA.
So who are they going to start?
That's the question. You know, I mean, so it's a real kind of cat-and-mouse game, I feel like, because if you're Louisiana Tech and you're K-State, do you say, okay, we're going to hold our number two for potentially playing Arkansas or an elimination game?
Yeah.
And I don't know how you do this, but it really stood out to me about both of these teams. I mean, Louisiana Tech, their number one, Reed Smith, a right-hander, 5.92 ERA, 1.40 whip. Nichols, 3.74 ERA, a 1.25 whip. And you go to Kansas State, and it's a similar thing. They've got their number one is Owen Borema, 4.91 ERA, 1.36 whip. Jackson Wentworth is their number two, 4.18 ERA, and a 1.09 whip. So the numbers are better for their number twos in both of these situations.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know. I don't know who they're going to start against. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. K-State's a little bit of a small ball team. We were talking about this earlier. They remind me a little bit of Arizona in that they were, you know, the record looks a lot like Arizona's record looked last year, and Arizona did not perform well here in Fayetteville. They went 0-2, and they were gone. K-State 32-24. They went 16-17 against Big 12 teams. RPI is 45. SOS is 30. They are maybe the only team in the NCAA tournament this year that has been outscored season total. Their per-game run differential is a -0.03, but they do have 7 quad one victories, and I think that was a big feather in their cap. They beat Oklahoma State in the Big 12 tournament, and I think that was a huge deal for them.
Right. Well, when you get this time of year, I tell you, the thing I've learned is anything can happen in the game of baseball. I mean, all it takes is for a team to get hot at the right time. I mean, you can go year to year and look at some of these teams that get hot at the right time, and they're tough to beat. You know, they go out – a team like that, they can swing it a little bit, play some small ball, steal some bases, mm-hmm. put some pressure on the defense. I mean, well, we saw it with TCU last year. Real aggressive on the bases. Of course, they could swing it. I mean, they could do it. They did it all against us last year. Everything went their way. I try to flush that from my memory, but it's still it's still embedded in there, unfortunately.
You wake up in cold sweats thinking about it at night. You know, the stolen bases is an interesting thing for K-State. They're 127, 150. They're 10th nationally in successful steals this year. They've got a guy, Brendan Jones, who's 37 of 39, but they've got four or five players who've got double-digit steal totals.
You know what, though? You can't steal first. So you got to be able to get on base.
But they do walk a lot. Yeah. Even though the batting average is not good, they are one of the best teams nationally in walking.
I did see that. So, but we're one of the best in the nation at not walking people. So
who knows if Arkansas and K-State will even play.
Yeah.
I feel like K-State's got a real uphill battle to get to a matchup with Arkansas unless SEMO upsets Arkansas on Friday. That's just the feeling here.
Yeah, let's don't poison it with that.
All right, we got plenty more to get to here on the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, but first a word from our sponsor.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Welcome back into the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. Before we get going more on regional talk, and we're going to look back at the SEC tournament as well, we wanted to say congratulations to Grant Cook, the Razorbacks catcher. Gosh, I forget the years that he played here. Was he 2016 to 18, I believe, were his years. They all kind of start running together. He got his call-up to the Pittsburgh Pirates on, I believe it was Tuesday, retroactive to Monday, an injury reserve for one of the Pirates' catchers. But he's going to be able to maybe make his big league debut this week.
Yeah, that's awesome. It'd be great if he could catch Paul Skeens, wouldn't it? How about that?
That would be pretty cool. In fact, I just got a text. Andy Shoup, who's our lead photographer here, he said Grant Cook is going to catch game two today for the Pirates. So I guess they're playing a doubleheader, and he's going to pitch game two today, or catch game two today.
Well,
it's Paul Skeens'
him.
Birthday. If Skeens throws, that might be
that's awesome.
Get a no-hitter or something. you see Grant Cook, he's going to wear number 56 for the Pirates when he plays this week. Who knows how long this is going to last. His offensive numbers are not real strong this year in AAA. But this is a deal where you bring up a catcher who's a reliable defensive option, and that's certainly what he is. This is just a really cool deal for Grant Cook, because you can speak to this better than anybody. You just never know if you're going to get that call when you're in the AAA.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, and Grant's a guy, like you said, if you're good behind the plate and guys like throwing to you, you can play this game for a long time as a catcher. And that's the way Grant is. I mean, pitchers like to throw to him. You know, the offensive numbers haven't always been there, but boy, he can receive, he can throw, he can call a game. And so, you know, that's the name of the game right there. If you're good behind the plate and you get a hit or two, that's a bonus.
It is Paul Skeens in game two today.
Is it really?
Yeah, they're playing at Comerica against the Tigers, and Skeens is throwing game two. So I think he's going to get to catch Paul Skeens tonight.
That is awesome. I have to tune into that. Actually, yeah. I can't, but I'll record it.
It was either yesterday or today. It's Skeens' birthday. I saw that recently. So congratulations to Grant Cook. That's a really cool deal. Another former Razorback and a local kid, a Fayetteville High School Purple Dog, getting the call up. Just a really cool deal. What tell us the story about when you got your call up to the Rockies.
You know, it was crazy. So I was the last guy. I was told going out of spring training that I'd made the team. I had a really good spring, led the team in almost every category. A guy gets healthy at the last minute, contract issue. So I get kind of sit down to AAA. I end up getting hurt early in the year. I tore an oblique muscle. And out of all the injuries I ever had, worst injury ever, I was on the DL for 31 days. Couldn't swing a bat, couldn't do anything. Manager comes to me, Chris Crone came to me and he's like, hey, can you go today? And I'm like, well, today's the day I'm supposed to start my rehab. Hadn't swung a bat at all. And he's like, he winked at me. He's like, I think you need to go today. And I said, I'm good. And Matt, I haven't swung a bat. Now, I've stood in and tracked pitches with pitchers throwing bullpens, but I hadn't swung a bat. And so he puts me in right field for the first inning, calls me in after the first inning, said, congratulations, you're going to the big leagues. And I'm like, hey, can I get in at bat? I haven't seen a live pitch in 31 days. He's like, are you crazy? He said, get in there, pack your stuff, and go to the hotel. So, but the coolest thing was calling my parents. I called my parents, talked to my dad, and told him. And my dad's not an emotional guy. I don't think I ever saw him cry. But I could hear it over the phone. I mean, he was, like, breaking up. Because, you know, you think about it, growing up in Winslow, Arkansas, playing on all these little dirt fields around here, big rocks on them, followed us all around the Southwest Conference, playing everywhere. I mean, they drove thousands, thousands of miles, hauling me all around, and then going to watch me play when I got in college. It was just a really cool deal. I'll never forget that phone call the rest of my life telling them. So it was really cool. And then as it turns out, I fly out at like 4 a.m. We have a day game in Denver. My flight's delayed. Everything that could go wrong. Traffic was bad. So I get to the game in like the third inning, scrambling around. I get down to the dugout, and Toby Hare was the bench coach. Buddy Bell was the manager. But I'm just kind of getting situated and, you know, want to take a couple of swings. And I still don't know what it's going to feel like because I have not swung a bat. Mm-hmm. So I go up the tunnel and I take a couple of swings up there. I'm like, okay, I'm good. And I end up pinch hitting in the eighth inning, got a base hit. Fortunately, my first at bat. It was funny though, the very first pitch, because when you haven't seen a pitch in that long, you don't know. So I saw he started me off with a breaking ball away. Jay Johnstone was the pitcher. The next pitch was a fastball, pretty much down the middle, and I hooked it foul down the right field line. And I thought, okay. And I stepped out and I looked at the scoreboard and it was 98 miles an hour. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to be okay. Because I was worried. Mm-hmm. But 98 looked like 78. It was crazy. Everything was just, you would think you'd be nervous. But I think all those years in the minor league, everything just kind of, I was so relaxed. And plus, you're in a major league ballpark, huge batter's eye. I mean, you saw the ball. The ball looked like a beach ball coming in. So, anyway, getting a base hit, my first at bat, and, yeah, we ended up winning the game, so it was really cool.
And that was at Coors.
At Coors Field. Larry Walker had gotten hurt. And, by the way, probably the best player I ever played with or saw play was Larry Walker. It was really unbelievable, the stuff he could do with a bat. When he was healthy, he was unbelievable.
And who did you play with in the Yankees organization?
I played with all those guys, Jeter.
Mm-hmm. And you think Walker was the best?
I think Walker was the best all-around player that I ever played. He had a cannon. He could run. He could hit. He could do things with a bat that was unbelievable. I could tell you so many stories about spring training. Like I hit in his group in spring training, and I learned so much. I hit with him and Todd Helton and Jeff Cirillo. Mm-hmm. We were hitting in a hitting group. I have no idea how I was fortunate enough to end up in that hitting group, but I learned so much from those guys. Todd Helton was another one, was psycho. I mean, he would go 3 for 4, and he'd be like, well, what'd I do that at bat, Bubba? Did I drop my hands where I was and he would like analyze the one out, and he'd go up and break down film on why he made it out. But I mean, that's why he was great. But it was awesome. But yeah, coming up with Jeter, Posada, Mariano, all those guys, I was so lucky in the Yankee organization. But it was cool to get a chance to play with Larry Walker.
Larry Walker, you know, the thing that I remember best about him, I think the All-Star game may have been at Coors, but he's batting and somebody throws in on him. I don't remember who it was. And he like turns his batting helmet around, where he's got the ear hole cover on his other, you know, and he moves to the other side of the plate.
Well, that might have been the Randy Johnson.
I think it was Randy Johnson. I think it was the Randy Johnson. That's what I was thinking of.
Hey, I'll tell you one quick story. I know we don't want to take up the whole time. I'm taking a round of BP in Coors Field. So I'm using – Larry takes me downstairs and shows me all of his bats. Like it's like heaven opened up, and I'm looking at all of his bats in the bat room. Because my stuff had all gotten lost, so I had one bat that came with me, and so I'm using one of his bats. So taking BP one day, and it was a round of three, and I'm like, I came out, and I'm like, man, this thing, something's, it's stinging. I'm like banging it on the ground, and he goes, here, let me see it. And he took three swings, upper deck, upper deck, upper deck, and he flips the bat and hands it to me. He goes, here, kid, I fixed it. And that's when I realized I am not that good.
So, you know, Grant Cook is going to join the team in Detroit. Is there any plus or minus of joining the team on the road versus in your home ballpark?
No, it doesn't matter. He's going to be on, you know, just, I mean, I just, here's what I hope. I hope that Tim's, his dad, I hope his family's able to get there. I really do, because my family missed my first game. They were able to get there the next home series, but they missed the first game. There just wasn't time for them to get there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I hope they're able to get there. But, yeah, on the road, it doesn't matter. Just he's going to be so excited. I'm so happy for him. I've watched him grow up from the time he was little, you know, playing him, Shaddy, all those guys coming up through Fayetteville High. So it's really cool.
All right, let's SEC tournament. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this because I don't know how much these games really mattered. They matter in the sense that you want to go out there and get your work in. They don't matter in regards to anything else. I mean, It's kind of like that last game against A&M. You play it, but you know what your seeding is going to be. Kind of the same thing here in Hoover. You play these games, but you know that the outcomes there are not going to affect you NCAA tournament-wise. What did you see against South Carolina and Kentucky? What did you like? What did you not like?
Well, I thought South Carolina, I thought we played a good game. I think one guy beat us, Cole Messina. I mean, you look what he did.
Two or three teams down there.
Three for four, five RBIs. You know, and the situations that he came up, we really didn't have a lot of chances to pitch around him. And I mean, we kind of had to pitch to him, and he hurt us. I mean, he really did.
I mean, the home runs both followed, like, lead off hit by pitch.
Yeah, was it hit by pitch and a walk, I think. Or maybe it was both
hit
by pitch.
I think it was both hit by pitch.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, you got pitched to him there. It wasn't a situation where we had first base open like when we've Caglione here at home. We had pitched to him, and, boy, he hurt us. And, you know, whether we made bad pitches out over the plate, I want to say one was a fastball out over the plate, one was a breaking ball. You know, I don't know how you get him out. I think you got to bust him in. You got to just mix with him. You can't go one way. But, I mean, he's really hot right now. You get a hitter that's hot like that. So, in the South Carolina game, you take him away, we win that game. And then we don't have to play Kentucky the second game. As soon as I saw Kentucky lost, I told my son Dalton, I'm like, I don't like this.
But would you rather play Kentucky or LSU right now with the way LSU's playing?
I would rather have played LSU. Okay. I really would have. Just something about – I just don't like the Kentucky matchup with us for some reason. It's kind of like I felt about TCU last year. Mm-hmm. There's just something about that matchup. And they play well against us, or at least they are this year. So
LSU is red hot right now.
Yeah,
I would not want to see. What are they in Chapel Hill? Yeah, they're in Chapel Hill, which is interesting because, you know, if you look too far down the bracket, that could potentially create a LSU matchup against whoever comes out of Arkansas's next couple of weeks.
Yeah,
LSU's. I wonder how they're going to do in a regional. They've got two really good starting pitchers right now. They got Gage Jump, and they've got Luke Holman. They're still not real good past them in terms of starting pitching. They do have a real good left hand, or they've got a good reliever in Griffin Herring. But, you know, but if they can get in the winner's bracket in the regional, if you play them in the super regional, that could easily be a 2-0 series for LSU with the way they're hitting.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, they can swing it right now, and they're hot. And, I mean, look at teams, like I said earlier, look at teams that get hot at the right time. Mm-hmm. I mean, we saw Ole Miss do it in 22.
Have we ever had a podcast where we didn't mention the 22 Ole Miss team?
I don't know that we have. They're in my head.
It goes to show you what a crazy run that was that they went on.
Yeah, it really is. But, you know, I look at their lineup and I look at our lineup, and it's we've got the potential to go out Friday and score 10 runs and then come back out Saturday. I mean, we've got the potential, Matt. And I just think I think a big part of it is the fact that you're starting over. Mm-hmm. You know, you get a guy like a Kendall Diggs. He's all year he's looked at the scoreboard and he's just trying to get hits. Now he can just relax and start. He's 0-for-0. He can go out there and his at bats have been better. So I think he's a guy that's a real big piece. I've said it all year to this offense. I think as he starts to go, we go as a team.
There have been times where Arkansas has not hit well in the last 4 weeks. The A&M game one, for five innings against Trey Pooser, it wasn't good. But over the course of the last 4 weeks, the trajectory has been up versus where it was. I think LSU was a team that you can maybe pull a little bit of inspiration from because when they came through Fayetteville, they were not hitting up to the right level that they are now and the level that you knew this lineup could based on their past production. So, I don't know. Maybe you can take a little bit of a solace in that. Arkansas is going to have to produce this weekend, but they do hit better at Baum. That's been a consistent all year. It doesn't matter if they're playing a non-conference team or an SEC team. Their offense has looked different here. You know, Mississippi State may be the best example of this. Mississippi State's the second best pitching staff in the league, and Arkansas scored 21 runs against them over three games. So,
yeah,
they're a different team in this ballpark, but they haven't played here in a few weeks. So it'll be interesting to see if they can kind of pick it back up.
I will tell you, as a hitter, there's something about being in your home park. When you step in the batter's box, it's different. Like, I didn't play basketball, but I've talked to – I know people, like, on the – would step to the free throw line in another gym and another court.
The basket will be like kind of bent. Yeah, it's like, what is this?
Yeah, a lot of times I step up to the plate and I'm, you know, maybe I'm a little crazy, but to me the mound looks off. I'm like, wait, nothing looks right. Where you step up there in the home ballpark, everything looks good. The batter's eye looks good. The pitcher, you see the ball great out of his hand. Everything just comes together. You just feel good. I mean, baseball players are creatures of habits, especially hitters. Having your routine at home is so important. Being able to do maybe a little bit of cage work before you go out on the field, or you got your power bag that you hit. All those little things that you do before the game starts leads up to how you perform in the game. And the bottom line is, when you step in the batter's box, it's feeling good. And I think this team feels really good at home. And so that's why I don't know. I just feel like we're going to catch fire. I really do.
I was actually a decent free throw shooter.
Were you?
I've taught my son won a game of knockout at the Purple Dog basketball camp yesterday. I was proud of him.
Good.
We've worked on that.
I like it.
Let's look at the national seeds here real quick. You take a look at them. Of course, you got five teams from the SEC who are national seeds this week. Four of the top five teams are national seeds from the SEC. You got Tennessee number one, Kentucky number two, A&M number three, Arkansas is number five, Georgia is number seven. So if all five of those teams win their regionals this week, they're guaranteed to get to play super regionals at home next week. That goes back to what we were talking about. The SEC is just pretty incredible. The ACC also, with five host sites, national seeds. You got North Carolina in there, Clemson, Florida State. North Carolina State, I think, might be a team that surprised some people, but you know, they're playing awfully good this year. It feels like this is going to be, over the next 2 weeks, kind of a chest beating match between the SEC and the ACC.
I think so. Like, out of all those teams, who do you see coming out of that regional? I mean, I think Tennessee's in a good spot. Kentucky's in a good spot. A&M. I don't know. I mean,
A&M's got Texas coming in. When I was down in College Station last week, the people in College Station were worried to death that Texas was going to come into their bracket. And now here they are. Now, Texas isn't playing real well. They're actually the number three seed. Louisiana Lafayette's the number two seed in that bracket. But I don't know. I feel like anything can happen if Texas and A&M – Texas got to beat Lafayette to get to A&M in game two. But if they play, that could be kind of fun.
Yeah, I think it'll be a fun game. That's one you would like to be at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to be in College Station, but yeah, if you were going to go to a college game, that'd be a good one to see, because it's going to be crazy.
You know, you just kind of look through these regionals, look at the two seeds. Tennessee's got Southern Miss. You feel like Tennessee's going to win that. They're a 50-game winner. Wake Forest goes to East Carolina. And you realize if Wake Forest can get out of that regional, you could have a Wake Forest-Tennessee Super.
Yeah.
And you got Chase Burns, who transferred from Tennessee to Wake Forest, going up against one of his old pitching buddies, maybe like a Drew Beam or something. That could be really, really fun.
I would love to see the Tennessee offense against Chase Burns. I think that'd be a fun one to watch.
Duke is at Norman. Feels like, you know, Duke was a team that thought they had a chance to host this year.
Yeah.
And they didn't get to do it. Alabama goes to Florida State. That's an interesting series. We already talked about Mississippi State going to Virginia. Dallas Baptist is a two seed at Arizona. That's the Tucson regional doesn't really move the needle a whole lot. I feel like LSU and North Carolina and Chapel Hill, that's one that I feel like is going to be appointment TV.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
Yeah, Vance Honeycutt in that game, going to be a top 10 draft pick this year. You got Tommy White. We know what he can do. Really good. We talked about College Station. Another one, maybe it's just West Coast baseball. I'm not interested in it. You got the Santa Barbara regional. It's got Santa Barbara, San Diego, Oregon, and Fresno State. It doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah, it doesn't really get the juices flowing.
Remember how crazy it was in Stillwater 2 years ago?
Oh, I feel like
it could be nuts this weekend. They get Nebraska and Florida coming to Stillwater. Can you imagine Jack Caglione in that ballpark? Oh, I think it's all to one.
He's not going to get anything to hit. They're going to walk him every at bat.
They might. Clemson gets Vanderbilt. Interesting deal there. I mean, Vanderbilt, they look pretty good in Hoover.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. I mean, you know, but it goes back to the SEC is so good. You can look at almost every regional and say, okay, you know.
Almost every regional has an SEC team.
Yeah, I mean, it's just good baseball. I mean, it really is. You can go through almost every one of those and feel really good about picking an SEC team.
Yeah, just run through the rest of the regionals here real quick. UNC Wilmington and Georgia Tech are at Georgia. Army is also in that one. Army's a team that they're kind of interesting to me because we saw them come through here last year. And, you know, it's different players, but it's the same thing every year. You get 22, 23-year-old, you know, West Point cadets.
Yeah.
That's a different kind of just person that you're playing against. Real mature, real strong. It's – we'll see what happens with Georgia.
Real disciplined.
Very disciplined.
And very just –
and Georgia's – I don't know that they're the most disciplined team this year.
Yeah. So that'll be a fun one.
South Carolina's at North Carolina State. UC Irvine was with Oregon State. And Indiana State goes to Kentucky. What else we got? I've got to pull my rundown up here.
You know, I don't – I see – I think Kentucky will come out of that. I think they play really well at home. I think Kentucky's going to roll through that. I think they're tough to beat there.
Keys for Arkansas to win this.
You know, I think we need our pitching to be what it's been all year. And, you know, we've kind of – I don't say we struggled towards the end. You know, our starting pitching. I don't worry so much, Matt, about starting pitching. When you get to postseason play, I don't worry so much about starting pitching. I worry about 27 outs. And we've got the guys to get those 27 outs. So whether we use an opener, a starter, whatever, we've got the guys to get those outs. So I feel really good about us. Now, I think we're going to score. I think we're going to score now. La Tech, they've got some guys. They got some. Their bullpen's pretty good. They got some guys out of the bullpen with really good numbers. Haven't seen them yet. Haven't seen any video on them. You look at their numbers. Their numbers are good. But I feel really good about it. I feel good about, you know, Hagen on his start day. You gotta love knowing that you've got a guy like Hagen Smith that you can roll out there. So game one, let's just say we don't use Hagen, which I don't think we will. We can use everybody, and we can be pretty confident that Hagen go out there. And this is a game where they've held him back all year. He could go a long time into this game if we needed him to.
I can't remember. Did LSU throw Paul Skeens against Tulane in game one last year? I feel like they did.
They did. Yeah. Yes, they did. And I want to say they were beating him, and he left him in for over 100 pitches.
Yeah, probably. I mean, he threw a lot of pitches last year. And that's really the difference between Smith and Skeens this year. You look at their numbers, and, you know, Hagen's not he's having a great year. He's not going to come close to matching the strikeout total last year because Skeens threw so many more innings than he did. Right. We've heard Van Horn say this many times. I've taken him out in the sixth inning, and I've told him we're going to use that inning down the road.
Right.
How important is that, the fact to have maybe a little bit more of a rested arm?
I think it's huge. I really do. I think they've done a great job. I think in the past, you look at Isaiah Campbell. There were a lot of times early in the year that he went up to 100 pitches, over 100 pitches. Mm-hmm. Blaine Knight, a lot of those guys. But with Hagen, they've done a great job of managing his pitching. I think he's ready to go. And when they're ready to turn him loose and say, go get him, it's you know, they can leave him out there. He's strong. He could go as long as they needed him to.
Didn't hurt Isaiah, did it?
No.
The 3 weeks that he had in the 19 postseason, that might have been the three best consecutive starts I've ever seen from an Arkansas starter, given the competition, because he did it against TCU, Ole Miss, and Florida State and Omaha.
Yeah. Well, you look at Isaiah, big, strong kid. You know, he's a lot like Hagen Smith. Now, the difference in Isaiah, to me, I watch his arm action. It's a little bit smoother. Mm-hmm. Hagen's more of a violent, like every pitch is like 100%. Mm-hmm. Where Isaiah at times looked like he was kind of just playing catch with the catcher. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the difference in him going 100 versus a guy like Hagen. I think the way the arm works is different.
So there, when we talk about rest, and Arkansas is the most rested team here, like we said, Louisiana Tech played 6 games in 5 days at the Conference USA tournament. SEMO was 5 and 4 days at the OVC tournament. K-State played 3 and 3 at the Big 12 tournament down in Arlington. Arkansas has had more rest than any of these teams. We know that it is a good deal for pitchers to have their arms rested. From a hitter standpoint, I feel like it maybe gets overlooked a little bit how tired your legs can get and how that affects you, and how having a week off like they've had here, and they've been practicing and doing some workouts and stuff like that, but they're off their feet a lot over the last week. How much does that help as a hitter?
Okay, so you're probably not going to like this answer. As a player, I did not want a day off. My manager would ask me, okay, you want a day off tomorrow, travel day, whatever. I'd be like, no. After I took a day off, I don't know. It got me out of my rhythm and my routine. Now, I know pro ball is a little bit different. you know, I think it might help the guys get healthy. But as far as like seeing pitches, mm-hmm. I mean, you can, you know, like I said, I was on the disabled list for 31 days. I visualized my last at bat. I studied a lot of stuff that McGuire did. I didn't take the vitamins that he took, but I visualized like he did. And, you know, I'd visualize pitches. So I visualized my last at bat. I played it over in my mind every day like I was in the game. I don't think if you're not doing that, it's hard when you first step back in the batter's box. Everything's different. You can face your pitchers all day, but it's different when you're facing a different pitcher. I don't like a long time off. But it might be something that kind of resets the mechanism for these guys, and it might be good for them.
What about the guys who are struggling? Is it good to have time off? To maybe get out of habits that are unsuccessful?
Yeah, I think if you're working on something mechanically, I think it can be good. If you're tweaking something mechanically, a week to work on it, yeah, mm-hmm. it can be really good. But if you're a guy that's swinging it well, I'd be like, let's play tomorrow. Let's get this thing rolling.
How much do you think they've been scrimmaging this week?
You know, I don't know that. I would assume they've got some guys that have been out there throwing live. Mm-hmm. I think they want to manage it. You know, last thing you want is an injury, mm-hmm. you know, leading up to a regional. But I'm sure they're seeing some live pitching. And they've got ways to simulate what they're going to see. So they're getting their swings in, I promise. But it's mm-hmm. just it's different, man, when the lights come on Friday. So I guess – the long-winded answer to your question is I think everyone is affected differently. I didn't like a week off. Mm. I just didn't like it. Some guys do.
You can't deny, though, that the teams that have gotten knocked out of Hoover early have been the teams that have done best in the NCAA tournament for the most part.
For the most part, yeah. I mean, look at the teams that have won the tournament. They typically don't do well.
And that, I wonder about LSU this week. You know, we talk about how all this – they also had to play, what, six games last week?
Yeah.
So, you know, how does that – or five games in 6 days? I wonder how that affects them.
Yeah. Well, in Tennessee also.
Tennessee had to play a lot. Now, Tennessee managed their pitching pretty well, I felt like. You know, they were mindful of their top guys going too much, but – it'll be interesting. You know, I go back to that stat that we gave last week that the last three national champions have gone 1-5 in Hoover and that the last three SEC tournament champions didn't make the College World Series. Let's revisit that next week. Let's see how the teams that went the longest in Hoover did and maybe the teams that got out. Last thing, we talked about we've liked this is a good draw for Arkansas in the regional. We felt like last year was a good draw for Arkansas in the regional, and then TCU comes through here like a freight train and just blows everybody out. So what do you think are the lessons that Arkansas can take from last year's regional?
Okay, well, I wasn't on that train last year. When I saw TCU, I didn't like it because I remember what happened in Texas, in Globe Life.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, ugly there too.
I'm sorry. I didn't like the matchup last year with TCU coming to town. But what we can learn from that is – you know, anything can happen. I mean, it's the game of baseball. You don't overlook anyone in this game. Now, if you look at the matchup, us versus SEMO, we should win that game, but I've seen a lot of crazy things happen in the game of baseball, and so you don't take anything for granted. You don't take any win for granted, any team. You go out and you play Razorback baseball. I think that's the key, is to go out there and, you know, people are like, well, how do you go from losing, you know, two in Hoover to coming home flipping that switch? I don't even put any stock in Hoover. We already talked about the mental side of it. I think these guys are happy to be back home. I think we're going to go out there Friday, and you're going to see a team hungry, motivated, ready for a win, foaming at the mouth, ready to go. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
We thought last year that Hagen going against TCU, though, was going to be favorable for Arkansas. And, you know, I still go back to last year. When you're in these regionals or super regional, whatever, the people who run the game day operations during the entire season, they kind of take a back seat to workers that the NCAA flies in. And there were a couple of men who were here last year, and I just felt like they were way too conservative on that rainy day. Remember Santa Clara in Arizona, they probably could started at about 5:30, 5 o'clock, somewhere in there. That game didn't start till close to 8. And then you can't get Arkansas and TCU. You know, and I've talked to people about, you know, what happened to Hagen that day. And it was like, you know, I think his adrenaline, they said, you know, he's an adrenaline junkie. He just got so worked up on Saturday thinking that was going to be his start against TCU that when he came back out against them on Sunday, he just couldn't find that level again.
But you know what? I think
and so. I wonder how the rain delay affected things last year.
I think it did. I absolutely think. Boy, when you get the juices flowing and you're ready to play, and then you're told you're not going to play, mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it can affect things. I still remember being in North Carolina, and do you remember all the delays in North Carolina? And we're like, it's sunny skies, and we're sitting here, you know, and there's no rain, and I'm going crazy thinking, what's going on? Mm-hmm. It's almost like that dude, he walked back and forth so everyone could see him with his tablet in the weather. I'm like, dude, come on, let's play ball. But back to your point, I mean, you look at Hagen, you know, one inning, six hits, eight runs. I think Hagen learned a lot from that.
I think it's been a driving force for him all offseason.
I absolutely do. I really do. I think that motivated him this offseason. Not that he needs extra motivation. I think that was a small piece of it. He wants to be great. He wants to pitch in the big leagues. Now, that probably was a little bit of motivation, but I think, like I said, I think he's a guy that's driven, and I don't think he needs extra motivation, but that I think he learned from that.
This is the time of year that you got to have your older players lead you, right? Yep. I mean, that's what happens when you get to the World Series. It's great if you can have a Peyton Stovall come along as a freshman and hit five times in the World Series, but you got to have this week. You got to have your Hagen Smith at your best. Brady Tigard, he's got to find something. Mason Molina, Will McIntyre, Kendall Diggs, Stovall. You can go on and on down the list. Those have got to be the guys that lead them this week, I feel like.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, from the offensive side of it, I go back to Kendall Diggs. I think you know what you're going to get out of Stovall. I think the key for us is finding the right combination to get runners on base for Stovall. Mm-hmm. I think that's the key, whoever it is. And, you know, a lot of times one or two guys get hot, hitting's contagious. Next thing you know, boom, the whole lineup's rolling.
Well, we when we do this podcast every year, we always say we don't know what we're going to talk about next week. It could be that Arkansas's done. It could be that Arkansas is going back for the Super Regional, but we will have at least one more podcast coming up next week, either looking back at the Regional and wrapping up the season or looking ahead to the Super Regional. The schedule of games this week, Friday again, Arkansas and SEMO scheduled for 2. The second game between Louisiana Tech and Kansas State is scheduled for 7 on Friday night. On Saturday, the schedule is 2 o'clock and 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock will be the winner's bracket game. And then on Sunday, 1 o'clock and 6 o'clock start times. If they have to play Monday, they haven't announced a time for that game yet. That'll be one that's announced after the conclusion of Sunday's games. Hope you come to WholeHogSports.com all week. We'll have coverage leading up to the regional, then obviously from the games. Media Day is going to be out at Baumwalker Stadium tomorrow, where we've got a chance to talk with all the coaches and players after they go through their practices. You can hear Bubba on the Razorback Sports Network. We appreciate you being with us, and we'll see you next week on the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast.
Thanks to Kendall King, where their design talents are showcased by teamwork. Kendall King, Shop Cart, and Soapbox. They're your design professionals with home run stats.